cliffcentral.com.
G'day, hi, it's Richard Angus here, standing in for Adrian Kroonewald, who's away in Cape Town today. The following business conversation is brought to you by Trudon, the publisher of the Yellow Pages and proud supporter of small business in South Africa.
Hi, Dave from A1 Builders in Pretoria.
Yeah.
It's Dan. I found your number on the internet, and I need you to build me a room, the purpose of which I cannot disclose.
What?
Fine. It's a sunroom. Can you start immediately?
It's 4 a.m.
I'm sure it's 4 a.m. somewhere, Dave, but here in SA, it's 10.
You mean USA?
There's more than one Pretoria out there. For the quickest and most efficient way to find what you're looking for, start your search with yellowpages.co.za or download the app. Yellow Pages. For local, reliable results.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Leadership Platform Small Medium Business Leadership Feature. I'm Richard Angus, hosting the show today. As I said, Adrian Groenewald is away in Cape Town. Today we're going to be talking about taxation, that beautiful word that gets us all riled up around February. And we're going to be talking about taxation in your business, what you should be thinking about as a small business owner. Joining me in studio today is none other than Daryl Fordham. He's been with us before, the CEO of Nolans, Not Your Ordinary Auditors. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Richard.
Okay, before we do that, however, we're going to go and talk to Catherine Constantinides, who's on the line with us. She's not with us yet? Not yet. Okay, we're still waiting for Catherine. I believe she's actually currently doing a walk of 85 kilometers a day with the WWF down in KZN following the journey of water. So I trust we'll get her on the line at some point. Okay, so perhaps let's, Daryl, before we get to Catherine, just let's talk a little about the basic concepts of taxation. I mean, we all understand and feel the pressure of taxation in our own personal lives, but when it comes to a company, what are the kind of things that we should be thinking about? What are the, I mean, we talk about taxation. What is it? When do you have to pay tax as an entity? Just let's get that one sorted out first.
Okay, Richard, I think to start, there's too many people who leave the question of taxation till the end of the year or until a later stage. So probably the first place to start is to actually say, be aware of what you're in for when you go into business and plan accordingly. Now, there's a couple of different types of entities, obviously companies, sole proprietors. I think those are the two major ones. Closed corporations fall under companies.
Okay.
And then the receiver of revenue has given us three categories in terms of taxation. So the smallest one is the turnover tax, which is for basically sole proprietors trading, doing a turnover of less than R1 million. There are certain criteria that you have to meet to qualify for that. Specifically, personal service providers have been excluded from that bracket. And then a very, very, very favorable bracket to fall into is what they call small business corporations. Now, that is for trading operations. Also, it's got a couple of criteria you need to meet. So this needs to be your only shareholding, this particular entity. The previous threshold for taxation was turnover was for 14 million, it's now been increased this year to 20 million. So it scopes in quite a number of small businesses. Now, the nice part about this is that if you are able to meet the criteria, you can save effectively close to 95,000 rands in taxation on an annual basis, and that's on your profit.
And okay, so that's a fairly nice little incentive there for small businesses that we've got a shot in the arm.
Darryl, can I just ask the question?
Yes.
You speak of the criteria must be the only shareholding. So if somebody wants to split his business into three businesses, he won't get around that way.
No. That's one of the specific exclusions. I can actually go through very, very quickly in terms of the criteria. You need to, your business needs to be owned by shareholders that are natural people. You can't have interest anywhere else. There is, you're allowed to have unit trusts and listed shares and things like that, but it's below certain little thresholds.
So let me just interpret that for listeners out there. So you're not allowed to have a shareholding in Company A that's registered for small business corp tax.
Yes.
And a shareholding in Company B that's also registered for small business corp tax.
That's
it. You're only effectively allowed to have one company that's registered where you as a natural person have a shareholding. So it's really to promote that entrepreneurial engagement that we're looking for in the country.
100%. And then, of course, it excludes personal service providing. So if you a consultant or whatever the case may be, probably not the space that you can fall into.
Okay, I'm with you.
And then the last is where most businesses are situated, is where you pay 28% on your profit every year. And I think we can then just discuss a little bit further what constitutes turnover, what expenses,
okay,
and so on.
Okay, great. So it sounds to me like there's been a structural shift, so to speak, in taxation. I know, you know, small business tax is relatively new or relatively recent.
Correct.
How long has that been around? Do you know, Daryl?
Probably 4 or 5 years.
4 or 5 years. So it's a fairly new implementation to stimulate the growth part of the economy from small businesses. Now, let's just talk. Now, I mean, we're talking here income tax. There are also some other taxes that are linked to your business. Before we get too deep into income tax, let's just quickly cover those. We have talked about them in some form, way or form in other shows, but let's just quickly go run through those again so that people are on the same page. You've got VAT.
Correct.
You've got PAYE, UIF, and skills development levies. Those are some of the ones that come to mind for me.
One that a lot of people forget is workman's compensation.
Ah, yes, good old workman's compensation.
Good old workman's. And it's not something that you can get out of it. Actually, it's a legal obligation. As soon as you employ staff, you need to register for that. And that's done on an annual basis, normally around February, March on an annual basis. You submit your figures, get an assessment, and it's a percentage of your payroll costs.
Okay. So workman's compensation, UIF, PAYE, and skills development levy, those are all taxes that are, let's call them, employment related. So the
Correct.
Moment you've got employees in your business, heads up business owners out there, you should have these elements of tax somewhere in your business. And if you don't have them right now, you should be asking some questions. Where are they? And make sure that you're appropriately registered. And interestingly, you have to register for all of these taxes and
you
make
do.
Sure that you're registered with the right people. So, for example, if you don't register with the UIF, yeah, you might not be seeing a bill, but you still have a liability for it. And it's the onus is on you as the business owner to actually do that registration and get – and, you know, it's one of those weird scenarios in life where you have to register to pay somebody something.
Well, interesting. I want to jump in there. There's actually something that's recently been launched by the UIF. It's called U-Filing. Mm-hmm. Now, people aren't aware of this yet. It's brand new.
Okay.
what's historically happened is people have registered with the receiver of revenue and paid over their – 1% from the employee deduction and 1% to the employer, paid it over and assumed that everything is all okay. And it's not. You actually have to submit all the documentation through to the UIF department as well, so that the UIF department can marry up the information, the ID numbers, the employment dates, and so on. And this is where a number of employers have land himself in hot water, is where a staff member for some reason wants to go now claim from UIF and the records aren't up to date.
And records aren't in place. Okay, and that could be problematic, to say the least.
It does become, yeah.
Okay. Now, when we talk of, let's get back to this question of tax. Maybe let's go into a bit of a basic conceptual space of, so what is actually the definition of income in a business? Because people talk about turnover, they talk about their sales. What does the receiver look at in terms of the this definition of income?
Well, it's the fruits of your labors if you are in the service industry. So if you are a consultant and you charge by the hour, you would charge $500 an hour, whatever the case may be. Submit your timesheets, get paid by your client, and assume that's 50,000 rand for the end of the month. That would be that would constitute your income, not necessarily your taxable income.
So there is a difference between this word, because I think people hear the word income and taxable income and they go, oh, well, that's one and the same thing. It isn't.
100% correct. Now, moving into the next question is expenses. Now, what happens is in the definition of the income tax, it talks about expenses incurred in the production of income. So let's go back to the example of the consultant. So the consultant uses IT infrastructure, cell phone, travel, and those related type expenses. He is entitled to deduct those expenses against the original income. So let's say, for instance, it's a 50,000 rand income. We've got 10,000 rands worth of expenses incurred in the production of income gives you a 40,000 rand taxable income. That is then subject to tax. Obviously, this excludes if we're going to pay staff or anything like that in terms of salaries and so on.
Okay. So I think that's quite important for us to think about for a moment because, you know, often as businesses start up, I mean, the classic startup is out of your garage, so to speak. And, you know, the first question people ask is, okay, so what expenses can I deduct and what is not going to be allowed? So, you know, the classic question of, you know, can I now claim all of my home loan repayments against my income, you know, all the people that work with me, including my maid, my gardener, everybody involved in my life, and I can deduct all of their salaries because I'm now working from home. Talk to us a little about how that process should and does work.
Well, very interesting enough, this is an area that the Receiver of Revenue is very aware of. He's actually in the past released notices to say that when he's performed reviews or audits on taxpayers, he's mm-hmm. found that entrepreneurs have battled to differentiate between business and non-business expenditure. So the best thing to do is actually sit down. This is why I say if you're going to go into business, get an understanding up front of what you're in for, mm-hmm. get an understanding up front as to what expenses you're allowed to deduct, and you can then plan accordingly for your tax payment. So the best thing to do is to consult your tax practitioner, accountant, and get an understanding of what is and isn't deductible.
Yeah. So you want to go back to that definition of in the production of income. So, you know, if your home for, let's take some examples. If your home is 200 square meters in size and you're using 50 square meters, my logic tells me at most I would expect to see the expenses of running that in my house, potentially I could claim up to a quarter of my expenses and definitely no more because I'm only using a quarter of the house for business purposes. So kind of the definition leads you, and I know there will probably be some other elements that you need to consider, but fundamentally the definition of in production of income tells you what should be happening on the expense side and what you should be thinking about. There are obviously some other types of expenses out there that one needs to bear in mind and think about relative to your business. And the whole question of income and expenditure. When you talk of income, sometimes you get paid or you haven't been paid in cash. What is the tax man's position in terms of income that you receive? I know we talk of the principle of income received and accrued to you. Let's talk a little about that and how that impacts on businesses.
This becomes a quite interesting playing field because the Receiver of Revenue has quite a strict stance on it. Is if it has accrued to you, subject mm-hmm. to obviously certain deductions in certain industries, it's then subject to be included in income and then obviously calculated a tax calculated on it. Where this becomes challenging is from a cash flow management perspective.
So I wanted to create that link, thank you Darren,
yeah.
to our working capital management conversation.
Yes.
Because for example, if you, and I mean Adrian often talks about the scenario of you consult to a big corporate or parastatal or something of that nature and you're getting paid in 90 days and you're at the end of your tax year, guess what? If you've invoiced that person and they're only going to pay you 90 days later, you're actually going to pay tax on effectively, or that invoice is going to be included in your taxable income, you know, at the end of February, for example, and you might only be seeing your payment in May,
Richard,
90 days later.
Just to jump in there, not necessarily just invoiced. If you've done the work, it's accrued.
Yep.
So it then also still gets included into your taxable income. So, yeah, absolutely. You've got to be very, very careful. And that's why you've got to plan ahead and make sure that you provide. I mean, I've met some very interesting entrepreneurs who actually open up separate call accounts within their business to actually put their taxes, so their VAT, their POIE, their provisional tax, into a call account so that they know that that's not part of their income or their cash flow.
Yeah, well, I recall saying that on a previous show we were talking and about cash flow management, and the question of VAT came up, and I said if you're at all in the position where you're going to be paying money over to the receiver on VAT, the first thing you do is make sure you park the money that you have to pay in VAT. As it arises, you put that money away on a weekly basis or however you do it, so that when that amount comes to you, perhaps in, you know, when you're at the end of your 2 month cycle paying in the third month, that you don't suddenly find yourself looking for cash that's not there anymore.
Absolutely.
I made the point that you're actually collecting tax on behalf of the receiver of revenue. You're acting as an agent, therefore it's not your money. Don't use it and put it away.
Just one thing also to be very, very careful of is don't be one day late with the receiver of revenue with payments. Yeah. One day late is penalties.
Yep.
Thereafter is interest. And the receiver of revenue is very, very, very strict on that. So even to the point that if it takes you've processed the payment out of your bank account, but it hasn't hit the receiver's bank account before the deadline, you could be subject to penalties. So it's always advisable to factor in a day or two sooner and just make sure it goes through.
Yeah. I must say, I found there have been a number of changes over the years in terms of how a receiver takes their payments.
Yes.
I remember many, many years ago, you would literally run up to the receiver's office and drop a check in their post box. And I always used to remember the flurry of activity at the post box at 25 to 4 after banking hours had closed at 3:30 as everybody dropped off their checks for the receiver.
Cash flow management.
Cash flow management 101. But nowadays it's all done electronically with e-filing. And in fact, the receiver populates whichever bank you're with, your electronic profile with your payment, and you simply go in there, approve the payment, and off it goes. However, that does require that you remember to go and do that. And I personally have had experiences of getting a phone call from somebody to say, have you forgotten to approve the payment? It's now 5 to 4. Make sure it happens today before banking hours close. Okay, so income and expenditure, not that difficult, but you've got to be aware of some of the nuances that you could have in your business. Now, what's the difference between, you know, we talk about income, but what happens if I'm buying and selling a property in my business, for example?
Okay, so capital gains comes in there. Mm-hmm. So what would happen is the terminology is base cost. So let's say, for instance, you buy a property and it is an investment property and you pay R1 million and you hold on to this for 20 years, you would pay capital gains tax on the growth in that property. Now, it's different inclusion rates in different capacities. So sole proprietor, it's lower than where it is in companies and trusts.
Okay. So let me just simplify this. So when we say an inclusion rate, so let's do an example. Say you bought a property for R1 million.
Yes.
You hold the property for 10 years. You then sell the property for R2 million. What you're saying is base cost is what you paid for it.
Correct.
R1 million. And I've now sold it for R2 million 10 years later. So my capital gain is calculated as taking R2 million, my selling price, minus my base cost, which is R1 million. So R1 million profit. And then only a portion of that profit gets included in my income. Is that correct?
That's correct. Previously, it used to be half of that, 50%. Now, we're talking about from a company perspective.
Yep.
Half of that, that has been subsequently increased to 2/3.
Okay.
So call it 66.66% of the gain, so 666,000, is included in your taxable income. Then that is taxed at the company tax rate of 28%.
Company tax rate.
So if you had to work it out, it works out at effectively about 18.68%, somewhere thereabouts, of the gain.
Okay, is actually taxable.
Of the gain.
That's a company?
That's in a company.
And then
in individuals, what happens was historically it was at 25% inclusion rate. That's now been raised to 1/3. So 33 1/3%, and then that is assuming the maximum marginal tax rate, which up until February was 40%. You then had an inclusion rate previously of 10%. That's now been increased to 13.3%.
Okay.
So not inclusion rate, sorry, the effective tax rate.
Effective
so the inclusion rate is 33 1/3 times the tax rate, the marginal tax rate of 40%, now 41% since the budget speech. So 13-odd%.
Okay. So it's quite important for people to know what the difference is between an item where there's potentially a capital gain and any items of normal income tax, income and expenses. Just let's quickly talk about what's the difference between a capital gain and a gain for normal tax purposes.
So a capital gain, if you are a, and let's use shares in trading in listed companies. So if you are a share dealer, so in other words, every day you wake up, get out of bed, buy a couple of shares.
Buy and sell. Okay.
That would be considered as income.
Trading.
Whereas if you are a investor, mm-hmm. in your personal capacity, and you buy shares on the stock exchange and hold them, put them in your bottom drawer for capital growth.
Mm-hmm.
When you sell those, that would be a – so let's say you're a dentist and then you're building up a share portfolio inside. That would then become a capital gain. There are a certain number of rules, like you're not allowed to trade in those shares for a couple of years. I think it's 3 years, if I'm not mistaken, 3 or 5 years. And that would then convert it. So it's short-term trading as opposed to long-term growth, if you had to try and, in layman's terms, try and have a look at the differences.
Okay. Okay, so capital gains are all about long-term growth intention, and I guess it goes to intent.
It does.
Versus income generation is all about the short-term, let's call it profit and lossing as you go.
Correct.
Okay. Now, we talked earlier about small business tax and how that the tax rates themselves are different. Are there any other sort of incentives that a small business, SME, can expect to see from an expense side that perhaps they're allowed to do that you don't generally see in other forms of expenses?
There's a whole range of incentives that specifically around, if you have a look at manufacturing concerns, you have accelerated depreciation allowed for, which is basically an incentive to entrepreneurs to go and invest in new machinery. So if it's new and unused, it can be a 40% write-off, not prorated in the current year, which is substantial benefit.
So you buy the item on the 25th of February, you get to write off 40% on the 28th of February.
That's correct.
I like that idea.
Yeah, it's one of those structures that the receiver's brought in to incentivize business to invest.
Okay.
So there are other sort of deductions and whatever, but I would say for most entrepreneurial businesses, it's probably around depreciation is one of the bigger ones.
Okay. I think something that I'm always aware of, and it's important for small businesses to think about, is to always keep track of your expenses, because I think the biggest thing is you kind of run a year, and then you sit down and go, okay, let's do my tax computation. And you go, ooh, I don't have all the slips. And, I mean, you talked about prepare and be ready right up front. But, you know, keeping track of all the slips that you know, whenever you sat down at that coffee shop having a meeting with somebody, whenever you drove somewhere, did you keep track of your mileage? When you used the phone for business purposes, were you actually tracking its use? One of the things that I found quite an important shift in focus is this whole question of if you use an item, let's call it a computer, a cell phone, etc., mainly for business purposes, and your personal use is incidental, the receiver of revenue actually now allows you to claim the full cost of that item from as an expense in your business, as long as the use, your personal use, is purely incidental to it. Now, where the line is always, and I see Daryl shifting in his seat there, where the line of personal use is always a question, you know, but I mean, reality, you know, if you've previously had yourself the traditional my business phone and my personal phone, and you decide, listen, at the next upgrade, I'm just going one phone, and you previously were spending, you know, 1500 rand on your personal on your business phone, and you know, 300-400 rand on your personal phone because it included your subscription and your calls were pretty negligible, I think you've got a very pretty strong case that you can show what your personal usage, and you can do itemized billing and all of these good things. But I think that that's something that people need to keep track of. The one hint I found recently, having experienced this myself with my business partner, Grant, in the finance team, we happened to look for some documentation that we needed and discovered that these beautiful till slips that we all get nowadays are all thermally produced or thermal transfer produced. So what happens is when you get 6 months down the line and you take out the slip, it's blank.
Yes.
Because it's kind of the heat of being in a wallet or in a wherever it is. So it's what we've decided to do in our business is we actually just take our cell phone, we take a photo of the slip, and we upload that to a file server, and we now have a digital image of the slip. And now I know the receiver would say keep your original slips. My comment is I think my image is going to last a lot longer than my thermal till slip. So yeah, just a hint out there.
Just to add in there is that the receiver requires you keep the supporting documentation for 5 years.
So he's going to have lots of blank pieces of paper nowadays.
And he is entitled to go back 5 years and request information, supporting documentation. And he's also very, very strict in that regard. If you do not have that supporting documentation, he disallows it as a claim. Okay, so it is imperative.
Keep all of that.
Absolutely. And just to go back to in terms of the determining your personal use and business use of a portion of laptops and all the rest of it, we normally advise our clients is to actually put in a specific amount for personal use.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
in your case, 200 rand, document it and how you got to it, and then you're in the clear.
Yeah.
Rather structure like that.
Yeah, you can't say you have no personal use. I mean, the reality is you do.
Richard, time has run out, but we need a longer time, which you and Arden are discussing. One point I want to make, golden thread has been running through these shows, and one of them is that it's extremely complicated to generate and run a small or medium-sized business. And what the guys have been saying consistently, man, speak to the experts. It may cost you a little bit, but boy, it's going to save you a lot of hassle and drama and also anxiousness along the way. Do you agree with that, Darryl?
Very, very much so. And in this particular situation, if you didn't know that the Small Business Corporation tax rules applied to you, it could actually cost you tax.
Yeah.
So definitely speak to the experts.
Right. There's a lot of peace of mind for a person who knows what they're doing. So speak to the experts.
Speak to the
experts.
Absolutely. Yeah. Final closing thought. Speak to the experts. Thank you, Darryl. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Visit leadershipplatform.com for all things leadership. This conversation was brought to you by Trudon. Visit trudonhome.co.za for all your small business marketing needs. Trudon, it's our business to grow your business.
Hey, Juan Cleaners, Worcester. Conrad speaking.
Hi, Conrad. This is Chad from the Glen Gables Hotel in Worcester. We're looking for a new cleaning service. I found your number on the internet. Would you be interested?
Yeah, Flip, great. Where are your offices?
On the corner of Alaho and Aldo, across from the Beef Cack and Tag Shack.
Got them right.
There's more than one Worcester out there. Reach a more relevant audience by advertising with the Yellow Pages. Visit yellowpages.co.za and get listed online with South Africa's most trusted business directory. Yellow Pages, for local, reliable results.